welcome you all to Eastlake Church and welcome to our network churches, including those online and Facebook. Glad that you're here. I'm honored to be with you guys week two of the series, Why Church? And before we jump into the series, I want to be very honest with you. I was the human being, the guy who said, I see no value in church at one point in my life. I'd come to know Christ and it took me about two years before I ever came and checked out a church, and it'd be this church. And I passed this church and obviously other ones, but this specific church at least twice a day during those 2 years. It was this conscious idea that there's nothing here that I need. It was the idea that there truly was no value in me coming up to church. And eventually when I finally ended up coming and checking this place out, it really was only because there was one specific person who was coming and I was coming to connect with them personally. So I wasn't even coming for the church per se. And then here we are today where I'm telling you why church matters. The irony, my friends, the irony. So last week, we kicked off the series and we covered a lot of ground. If you missed it, I would encourage you to go check it out online. Some of the big ideas we covered is that the church is intended, in the Bible, what we read, that the church is never intended to represent or to communicate a building or a place. What the church represents in the Bible are the people of God who are trying to live in love like Jesus. It's the group of believers. The other big thing we spent the bulk of our time talking about last week was this thing called the domino effect, or various things we can imply in our own individual lives to contribute to our own individual spiritual growth. And this week, we are building off of all of that. We are going to start things off by revisiting our theme verse for the series, which is Hebrews 10, 24 through 25. So it starts by saying, let us, the church, a group of believers, consider how to inspire each other to greater love and to righteous deeds, not forgetting to gather as a community, as some have forgotten, but encouraging each other, which means like to draw near or to offer support towards an end goal, but to encourage each other, especially as the day of his return approaches. Will you circle the words encouraging each other? The phrase one another or each other is used more than 50 times in the New Testament alone. The New Testament is a part of the Bible that came about after Jesus was around. And what all these verses do in their own unique way is reinforce the same big idea. This is one of the ideas that the Bible is oddly very, very clear about. There's some things that are vague. This one is very clear. It's that the Jesus movement is meant to be something that is done together. Write this down if you're taking notes. This is our first fill-in and the big idea we're exploring today. Why church? To connect authentically. And we're calling this talk the catapult effect. The ask laid out in the Bible is that this group of believers come together and that they create a community that carries a level of umph or heart and soul. In fact, when the New Testament refers to this body of believers, the church, it often uses words like the bride or a family or a body. These words imply intimacy. And I just said intimacy, okay? Don't be scared or too excited, okay? It's probably neither of those things. Intimacy in this way, meaning like deep connection in friendships. It's not a sexual thing. And spoiler alert, culture and study and research tells us that as a society, we do this very poorly. What studies show is that loneliness is on a rise in our country, and it's been on a rise. And what we're seeing is that connecting authentically and intimately is something that is very difficult for us, and something that we now are almost kind of all putting in the basket of marriage. It's something we're saving exclusively for our marriage. What studies are showing is that most of us stop connecting in intimate ways with a group of people, somewhere around the age of 28 for the most part. 28 is also the same year, the same age that the average person gets married in the United States. And while intimacy in a marriage, relational intimacy, is extremely important and something that we value in marriage, what the Bible and science make very clear is that we each are made for a greater support system than that. It's not supposed to be just us and one more person, that we need a greater network around us. And if you are here and you are a single adult, please do not believe the lie that says that you won't be lonely once you get married and you need to wait for marriage in order to experience the intimacy that you were made for. Non-sexual intimacy is something that we are all created for. As we explore this idea, connecting authentically, we're going to be spending the bulk of our time looking at various verses in the book of Romans. Romans was a letter written by Paul, who was one of the earliest, most profound, influential church leaders. And Paul is writing this letter to a group of believers, a very diverse group of believers, a very diverse culture. And he's telling these people how to find and follow Jesus, how to wrap their kind of head around it, and how to live and coexist in this new Jesus community. Paul kicks things off here by speaking to the individual first. We're going to be looking at Romans 12:1. So here's what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, you're sleeping, you're eating, you're going to work, you're walking around, and place it before God as an offering. The content prior to this verse, 12:1, is known to be some of the headiest, like nerdiest stuff you can find in the Bible regarding what it means to be me right with Christ, what it means to be right with Jesus. And now Paul is shifting all his attention into the application steps. He's telling you now, this is what you need to do with that. And the first thing Paul says, which is remarkably clear, is the call to Christianity is intended to be holistic, is intended to encompass our whole lives. Paul is calling for congruency or an alignment within the individual first and foremost. And if you're joining us here today and you're just checking out this Jesus stuff, you're just exploring it, you're here, again, just for other reasons, please know that we want this to be a safe place for you, that in no way was Paul even talking to right here, to the person who's exploring faith. He was talking to people who were saying like, hey, I'm all in. So if you're here exploring, know that you're in a safe place and you can relax. But for followers of Christ, Paul is saying that our faith is meant to encompass our whole life. And that it, we first and foremost, it's about us connecting with God, connecting with ourselves, coming to the table in an authentic, genuine way. Write this down if you're taking notes. Authenticity means owning all that we really are. Authenticity is the choice to own your unique personhood. And why does this matter in light of our conversation of connecting authentically as a group of believers? Because before Paul chooses to address how these people are to coexist, he speaks specifically to the individual. Right? And he says, I need you, Jesus wants you to bring everything, your whole self, to the table. It's kind of like this. Okay, each of us is an iceberg, right? We got our public life above the waterline, we got our private life below the waterline, okay? Our public life, there's nothing wrong with it necessarily, it's not inherently bad, it's not inherently shallow, it's not inherently fake, it's just our public life. And then we got our private life. As a culture, we are taught, and we consciously and unconsciously, to spend a lot of time making sure that what is above the waterline looks good. How I define good may be different how you define good, but bottom line is, it's a lot of, hey, make sure this looks good. In turn, we are a culture that spends very little time being considerate, aware, and even nurturing what is below the waterline. And what authenticity asks us to do is to take all of this into account. What authenticity says is that if you don't take all of this into account, you can't actually even connectically authentic with yourself, with God, or with others. And authenticity, it shows reverence for the whole iceberg. It shows value in the whole thing. It sees the whole picture. Because again, it understands without the whole picture, we cannot connect individually with God or with others on a authentic level. Now, what authenticity doesn't say is that we need to commit to public transparency, okay? It would be foolish and possibly the cause or a sign of a psychological disorder if we did not allow our private life to remain our private life. And intimacy loses its intimacy the second we put it all out there. It's intimacy, right? Because on some level, we hold it here. And again, there's nothing necessarily bad about that. But what authenticity and transparency and understanding all that we are invites us to do, it does invite us to make sure we do have some safe people who we are allowed and who we intentionally take below the waterline with us, slowly over time. This is why here at Eastlake, we spend so much time and focus and energy encouraging people to connect in growth groups or in circles of small gatherings, because we know in a row, you're not connecting with each other. You're listening to something, and that's a beautiful thing, but so much of the magic of life is when we're connecting with each other in circles. And there's a part of my story where I hid in a row for intentionally for several months, and I'm so thankful for those months, and I needed those months, and those months were good. But circles, we say circles are better than rows very intentionally around here. Because we believe when people gather together in safe environments that they will naturally find ways as individuals and as a group to drop below the waterline in their own way, in their own time. I see this happen in various ways. Currently, here's a couple quick things from my life, okay? I have a Tuesday evening growth group. It is a very special thing happening between us, okay? There is a ton of authenticity, but there are clearly limits to our transparency because it's not uncommon to hear people say, I don't want to tell you all the details, but here's kind of what I'm going through right now. Or here's how I feel about my current situation, but I'm not going to tell you what that is. Every other Friday morning, a group of us meet upstairs. It's called MOPS. It's for moms of kids 6 through baby age. This group does it totally different. There's like this unspoken rule in that group that says, I'm coming and being the real me. You come and you be the real you, and we're not going to fight about it. There's no judgment in that space. It is holy ground for these mamas, okay? In my regular non-group life, I have multiple sacred friendships where these people, I share my life with them. The good stuff and the stuff that doesn't always make me look good, the stuff that makes me look weak, the stuff that shows the stuff I'm working through. These are the crew, this is the crew that walks like through the thick of it with me. I'm not talking to them when it's like, oh, I went through this one thing and then here's how it showed up. I'm be like, dude, I'm walking through this thing and I have no idea like what exactly I'm doing in this. They see the messy stuff of life. And I regularly this season keep feeling the Holy Spirit like urging me, share more, share more, share more. And at first it was like I was resistant towards it because it felt like this, like, dude, I already share enough. But what I feel like God has been inviting me into is to deeper levels of being known and being loved. It is holy, sacred ground to be known and to be loved. And we cannot be fully loved if we are not fully known. And that is a vulnerable, messy reality, but is what God is inviting us into. So before we move on, here's my questions for you. How are you doing all the parts of who you are? Is there congruency between your public life and your private life? And then are there key people you're allowing into the whole you, into the whole picture? How are you doing on this first idea of connecting authentically with yourself, with God, and with the right others? And what I'm not trying to say here is that we need more friends or new friends. Some of you may need friends, and some of you clearly may need new friends, but what we're talking about is the depth of friendship. Let's keep reading what Paul says here in Romans. In this way, we are like the various parts of the human body. Each part gets its meaning from the body as a whole, not the other way around. The body we're talking about is Christ's body of chosen people. Each of us finds our meaning and function as a part of the body. But as a chopped off finger or cut off toe, we wouldn't amount to much, would we? So since we find ourselves fashioned into this excellently formed and marvelously functioning parts in the Christ body, let's just go ahead and be what we were made to be without enviously or pridefully comparing ourselves with each other or trying to be something we are not. So Paul just finishes this whole like, hey, come with all that you are. You, your whole life, I want you to bring that to the table. Right, and now he's shifting it to the group. And he's tying the group together now and saying, hey, you're one body. But he's still making it incredibly clear. You're one body, but you're still unique, complete individuals. If you're taking notes, this is our next fill in here. Connecting authentically invites me to, number one, acknowledge our differences. The Bible regularly encourages unity and diversity simultaneously. According to what we see in the Bible, these are not opposing forces. It is a constant reinforcement of both and. This concept touches one of the most beautiful realities of the church. That if it wasn't for the shared interest in love and Jesus and what is happening out here, we wouldn't necessarily come together. The church, in its natural sense, is bound to be a very diverse place. And that being the sense, where we're this place where we move together because of our shared interest in Jesus, then we need to be okay with the fact that we are going to be different. We're going to come with our different backgrounds and cultures and functions and way of thinking and way of being, our different ways of approaching life. And my encouragement to us today as a group, as a body, as a family in Christ, is to, yeah, let's be that kind of person. That is okay with differences. And I know this sounds so simplistic, but this is something I see trip us up regularly because in the human condition, there seems to be this propensity to see something different and to think something must be wrong. Who's right? Who's wrong? It's this quick idea that we can even get defensive and we can start to like focus all of our efforts because we're uncomfortable and we want to smooth out those differences. But what Romans is telling us is that maybe those differences aren't right or wrong. Maybe those differences have purpose. Maybe those differences are good and things we should be thankful for. That maybe our differences are a key part of the whole picture. Now, I want to be clear. Romans 12 is talking about differences, not sin. Okay? We're not talking about like, oh, we can have different opinions on racism. That's fine. That's fine. Discrimination, that's cool. Affairs, yeah. The different opinions, that's fine. Taco Bell, Mexican food, that's a sin, okay? That is not Mexican food, okay? Jersey Shore, it's a sin. It's not a difference, okay? No, what Romans is talking about is differences. It's not talking about wrong, truly wrong, sinful behaviors. Moving on, when it comes to the people we allow in our waterline, underneath our waterline, dude, you have to make sure you pick people who are okay with these differences. Safe people know how to accept differences. These people who know how to see differences and accept differences are going to be better equipped to love like who you really are. They're the kind of people who are going to help you find your lane and run in your lane. They are going to be able to see your unique giftings and bring out the unique best in you. They're not going to try and force their ways and their opinions or to carve whatever. They're going to help you find your sweet spot on the team. And resisting this idea of differences often has a way of manifesting itself in certain thought patterns or actions that don't bring out the best of us. Control, harsh judgment, envy, like that verse actually referenced, competition, pride, or even like thoughtless mimicking. The idea of like, oh, I guess this is the way we're supposed to do it. And not only are these unfortunate ways of being as individuals, these are things that actually keep us from connecting authentically long term. Again, we are brought together and created to be different. It is a purpose in the beauty of the church. It enables us to be what we were made to be. And one of the core values here at Eastlake, in light of that, is that in the essentials, we have unity, and in the non-essentials, we have freedom. We don't want this to be a place where we all look, think, feel, and do all the same things. We don't want a community of clones and robots. As cool as a community of robots actually kind of sounds, okay? That's not what we're going for here. Psychologist Henry Cloud says it this way on the topic. True intimacy is built on the freedom to disagree. We are made for unity, not uniformity, so let's embrace the differences. And then this is our next point. If you're writing notes, go ahead and take this one down. Connecting authentically invites me to embrace the mess. The ideas we have been looking at today have a way of uncovering the unruly, messy realities of relationships and people. And as followers of Christ, and even like as normal people, there's no way to avoid the fact that if we're calling people to come together authentically, we're going to create some level of mess. It's going to pop up from time to time. And here's what this point is embracing and inviting us to do. It's to expect and anticipate that things won't go as smoothly as you expected to or wanted to every time. I can tell I'm not embracing this truth that I need to embrace the mess well. When a mess pops up and then I start feeling shame or the idea that I just suck at life, and then my brain starts spiraling down this terrible tube of like, what could I have done differently to avoid the mess? And while there's validity in being like, oh, how did I contribute to this? No, I'm not talking about that. Shame and the spiral here are like, I mean, it's a vortex. And the core, oftentimes, is the lie that says, there shouldn't be a mess here. This shouldn't be so difficult. And again, that is a lie. Each of us is invited to embrace that sometimes things will be messy. It's kind of like this. When I was preparing for my wedding day, I remember reading in a book, hey, plan for things to not go perfectly. Plan for things to not go just the way you expect it to, and plan it to be totally okay. Now, I was never the girl, never the woman who like envisioned her wedding day. Like, I was super excited to like live my life and build my family with my husband and my soon-to-be stepson. Like, that's what I really deeply desired. But like, the wedding day was never my interest. We put like all of our emphasis on the honeymoon. We had a small like wedding under 50 people, like whatever. And I held on to that line in that book. Because as I was gearing up for the wedding, I regularly felt all this pressure of like all that hype. I have to care about everything. It has to be perfect. So that mantra kind of helped me to resist succumbing to the pressure, okay? And then eventually our wedding day came. Here's a picture. Here it is, okay? Even that dress, you guys. Because again, we were spending our effort and our time on our honeymoon. That dress cost $50 more, okay, than I wanted it to. And wait for the story, okay? So I do the right thing with the dress. I take like my sister and my friends and my mom and like, let's go do this. Dude, finding a wedding dress may be the worst thing that's ever happened to me, you guys. Okay, like that's like a terror. There's so much pressure involved in that world. Okay, doing that, they're no help because they're too nice. They're like, yeah, that looks great. Ooh, that one looks great. Okay. So then I was like, you know what? Who cares what they think? It's me, my husband. So I go ahead and bring my husband, okay? I know that sounds appalling to some of you, but it's fine. He's worse. He's worse. No, they're all great. Any one of these. Dude. So if I only bring my dad, okay? My dad, I should have brought him from the start. Immediately I try this one on. He's like, yeah, that's totally it. And he like, not like in a like fake way, but in a like, yes, this is you. It worked great. It was $50 more than I wanted to spend, though. So I was like, oh, nope, it's over. This isn't what I said to do. My dad was like, seriously, we're buying that stupid dress. Like, it wasn't an option. Okay, so the day came, we got all ready. We have our pictures taken, the venue's ready. It's all good to go. Then Pastor Mike, who's going to be officiating our wedding, shows up in his suit and tie. You know he only wears that suit and tie when people die or people are getting married, right? He looks all clean, put together like a real pastor. No. You know, he's going through his checklist. He goes to my husband. He's like, hey, where's the marriage license? The marriage license is the document that in the state of California you have to sign after a ceremony of sorts that actually like makes your marriage legal, okay? It's the thing you have to do. Cameron doesn't have the marriage license, so he calls to me like, hey, Carla, where's the marriage license? I don't have it. In the sea of details, we didn't get a marriage license. Here's the deal, you guys. It was my first wedding, my husband's second, so clearly whose fault is it, okay? Please. Okay, I'm an amateur. Okay, so here we are. The look, okay, and here, I remember that moment, and what I remember not feeling is panic and crisis. I almost felt this like magical thing of like, oh, I knew something wasn't gonna go well. I didn't think it was gonna be like the one essential document, but like I knew, like I've prepared for moments like this. It'll be fine. Yeah, Pastor Mike didn't have that same like affinity towards the situation. He has that face of like both like, you're so smart, but this was so stupid look, you know, like where he, I mean, you could see it in his face, like no marriage license. He wasn't pleased. But then you saw the wheels in his head turning, like they do sometimes. I didn't mean to make that funny, but that's funny. And then he goes and he's like this. He's like, that's fine. He's like, we'll do the ceremony. Tomorrow, you guys will go on your honeymoon. When you get back, you'll get the marriage license. You'll find me. We'll get it signed. You guys will put it in. And he said, in the meantime, don't touch each other or know you're living in sin. So, you guys, that pick. So here's the point of the story. Here's the point of the story. Bring it back. That picture I showed you, my wedding dress, is actually not even my wedding because you need a marriage license in order to make a wedding happen, okay? No, the point of the story is that embracing the mess often has this ability to help us like stay forward focused. It keeps us from feeling like we are in a crisis when things start getting messy. And as a church, we call ourselves the junk drawer of churches, this place where anyone come and anyone can fit in. We tell people they can belong before they believe. We tell people to come as you are, no perfect people allowed. Like these are slogans we say, you guys. We have to be ready to embrace the mess. This is something we have to anticipate. Nothing about our community screams, get it together and then come on in. We intentionally desire to keep a low bar for anyone to come and hear Jesus. You want to know how low our bar is? Look at your lead pastor, you guys. That's a low bar. That's who we're following. No, and we walk this out by committing to be people who walk through the turbulent and bumpy waters between grace and truth. That's what we're committed to do. And even though it sounds really nice on paper, like I can feel the anxiety in my body, okay? That's easier said than done. Embracing the mess is proactively being willing to work through the mess as individuals on our shared journey together as unique companions. We're not critics, we're not adversaries, we're not competitors. This isn't WWE, like this isn't combat. We're in this together, and that's how we approach it. We believe the best, which in large part reflects what Romans 12 is highlighting. We come as individuals together. It's the both and of this situation. And when, not if, but when we screw this up intentionally or innocently and we hurt one another, we are invited to be the sort of a community that extends forgiveness and moves towards one another despite our imperfections. Colossians 3 says it this way. And this verse is not on your outline, it's actually only on the screens. Bear with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgive each other, just as the Lord has forgiven you. So you also must forgive. The word forgive here means like to do a favor, to be kind, to be generous. Above all else, close yourself with love, which binds us together in perfect harmony. And let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you are called to be in the one body. And be thankful. When we are the ones to screw this up, which, ladies and gentlemen, we will do, let's also be the kind of people who quickly move to apologizing. Research shows that the best teammates have team members from top to bottom who know how to say, I screwed up. Give yourself the gift of knowing how to look someone in the eye and saying, hey, just to be clear, knowing what I know now, knowing how I made you feel, knowing your perspective, I most certainly would have chosen to do this whole thing a little bit differently or a lot differently, depending on your situation. Know that I have remorse for that, and that this situation has taught me something about me, about God, about us. Forgiveness is a powerful thing no matter what side of the table you are on. It builds trust, it fosters peace, it helps us to move forward well. And as a group of people, if we consider ourselves Christ followers who are saying people, we know the generosity of Christ. Like, shouldn't we be known to be the most generous people with our apologies and with our forgiveness? Healthy relationships are not a matter of the absence of conflict. Side note, if you're constantly in conflict, there may be some drama that needs to be dealt with, by all means, okay? But healthy relationships aren't about the absence of conflict, okay? They're about how people work through the conflict together in a healthy way. Which takes us to point three. Write this down if you're taking notes. Connecting authentically invites me to go beyond where I am. I believe that life, experience, what I've seen as a pastor, what I've seen in my own life, the Bible and science all confirm the same thing. Done well, done humbly, connecting authentically is the sacred, holy ground. It is vulnerable, and it doesn't always feel easy, and it can be very difficult. But there's some like mighty force that works in that. That connecting authentically, that's why we call this the series the catapult effect, because it has the capacity to catapult us forward like few other things can in life. It helps us to become expanded, fuller versions of who we are if we let it. That connecting authentically, there's just something in the mechanics of it, something that organically comes out that's going to give us constant stream of opportunities to grow and develop and to become the truer, most whole versions of who we are to be. Which fits exactly what we're saying that we see in Romans 12:1, right? And if you're here today and you're lonely, I want you to know you're not crazy and you're not weak. Loneliness is our body's way of saying, hey, there is a felt need that's going unmet. We're not made to be cut off from the body, right? This is what Romans is telling us. And like Romans 12 tells us, this even isn't about us individually and what we get out of it. What Romans 12 is also reinforcing is that the Jesus movement, right, that is supposed to be the movement of love traveling through the world to let all people know that they are loved by God, that they are worthy of love, that they matter, that they count, that they have value, that they have worth, that the Jesus movement hinges on not only us reconciling ourselves back to God authentically, but it also hinges on us connecting authentically to one another and love flowing between us. It's a triangle. It's not about us and Jesus alone. It's about us and others as well. This is our last verse, and let's go ahead and read it out loud together on go, okay? So ready, go. Love others well and don't hide behind a mask. Love authentically. I forgot to tell you guys what verse we're reading, so I'm glad you're quick. The underlying truth of 12 reinforces this biblical idea that love is meant to be worked out, flushed out in community. It's this idea that Romans 12 reinforces that the best preparation to love the world at large is to love those we are right alongside, right? Because love is not supposed to be this metaphorical thing out here that we just talk about. Love is meant to be something tangible, something we do, something we practice. This is how we learn to love the world, by learning to love the person next to us. Because love looks at humanity closely. It looks at the person, it looks at people, and it says, I see you, and I'm going to intentionally move towards you, and I believe the best about you, and I believe that together we are better. And in this sense, when we talk about this idea, oftentimes, right, that spiritual maturity is learning to love more, learning to love and live like Jesus. What Romans 12 does is it gives us more skin for those bones, and it shows us love is meant to be worked out closely. It's meant to happen when we connect authentically. This is the shared mission as one body of Christ, as a family of believers. This is about us unifying love and us being unified in Christ's love and moving forward to love the world at large. So what do we do with all that, friends? I believe that God is looking to intentionally pull us all forward towards love, his love and the love of others. I don't know how it's going to look in your individual life. Maybe you're here and you are lacking connection. Maybe you need friends. Maybe you're new and you don't have them. Or maybe you've been here for a long time and you once had friends here, but now you don't have friends here for whatever reason. Maybe you need to go find more friends here. We do that best right through growth groups. We talked about it. Small gatherings of people intentionally gathering to grow in friendship and to grow in faith. After service, we're going to give you the opportunity to do that on the patio if you're in a place where you're like, I just need some connections. That's how I met my connections here originally. For the most part, in large, it was through growth groups, okay? That's what we see work. Or maybe you're here and you have connections, but what you're realizing is you don't connect well with people authentically. Or maybe you keep people like above the waterline. You don't take people down. So maybe your invitation is to allow more of the right people into the bottom of the waterline. Or maybe you're here and there's some people below the waterline. And you're like, I think I need to kind of like float them back up. I don't know your situation. Maybe you're here and this whole thing like rattled something inside of you. Maybe it's grief. Maybe it's anger. Maybe your next right step is forgiveness or to go to someone and ask for forgiveness. And don't do the vague like, hey, I'm sorry for that thing. No, tell them. What are you sorry for? Specifically. How did you screw this up? Tell them. Let yourself live in that and tell them. It is healing. It is magic. Saying I'm sorry authentically is a beautiful thing. And maybe you're here and you're like, dude, I've got this. Good for you. Good for you. Be thankful. Be thankful. And then be open to hearing God saying, I need you to give this to other people. There's someone out there who needs to be brought in. Be intentional. Go after them. Not in a weird way. I don't know what your next right step is, but again, I believe that God is moving in each of our lives to move us towards him and towards others, and I believe that he desires for us to be that kind of community, a community that doesn't just talk about love, but a community that loves authentically, that embraces the mess, that allows us to be different, right? A community that knows, is generous with its apologies and its forgiveness. Let's be these people for each other, and then let this ripple out from an overflow of who we are face to face. In just a moment, I'm going to pray for you, and then you're going to have the opportunity to worship with two more songs, okay? Here's my ask. Here's my encouragement to you. Take the opportunity, take these moments to connect with God authentically. And then while you connect with him authentically, be open to hearing how God may be inviting you into deeper connections with others on an individual level. What is God stirring you towards? If you would stand with me. God, I believe that you are here, and I believe that you love us, and I believe that you desire to bring more goodness and love into our lives, and that you desire to use our lives to bring more goodness and love to other people. God, help us to be open to your love and to connecting authentically with others in that same love, God. Speak to us individually. Help us to know what you are inviting us to do next, and we pray this in your name. Amen.
Upon the waters, the great unknown, where my feet may fail, and there I find you in the mystery, in oceans deep, my faith will stay, and I will call upon your name and keep my eyes above the waves. When oceans rise, my soul will rest in your embrace, for I am yours.
Our God is powerful, our God is strong, and we stand on that truth. Let's lift him up. Here we go.
We call us out from the dead. To your freedom, our chains are gone. No weapon formed shall prevail. Your word is stronger. We overcome.
Yes, we do.
Whoa. Your glory resounds through the age, all saints declaring your great renown. Your kingdom forever will stand. We won't be shaken. We will not fail.
Here we go.
Our God, a mighty warrior, you're a consuming. age, all saints declaring your great now. Your kingdom forever will stand. No, we won't be shaken. We will not fail. Oh, our God, a mighty warrior, you're a consuming fire.
Jesus, the great commander, you conquered.